A reporter speaks, bringing you today's headlines through the courtesy of the North American Accident Insurance Company of Chicago, the largest and oldest company of its kind in America. And now for the headlines with Jack King.
Good evening, everybody. First, we have a message. Mrs. Peggy Morris of Detroit would like to have her son, Jack Morris, get in touch with her. Mr. Jack Morris is a xylophone player and master of ceremonies working in a road show out of either New York or Chicago. His father is seriously ill. Well, over there, French troops met the most crucial hour of the war tonight with a smashing counterattack in the vital Soissons region. Nazi aerial squadrons bombed the suburbs of Paris again, while more than 2 million German troops were hurled into the conflict along a 160-mile front that stretched from the English Channel to the Argonne Forest. Virtually all of Chancellor Hitler's armored divisions were thrown into what French Generalissimo Maxime Weygand termed Hitler's end-of-the-rope effort. A French war ministry spokesman, in describing the battle, asserted that while the French had given some ground, all their lines held. There was no breakthrough, he said. At this critical hour, the French Ministerial Council was called into emergency session in Paris. The council considered the military and diplomatic situation for 1.5 hours. When they adjourned, it was announced there would be no announcement forthcoming, nor was a date set for the next meeting. But the Ministry of Labor issued a call for all unemployed workers to aid in work undertaken for defense of the Paris region. This was taken to mean that, in keeping with Premier Reynaud's declaration that France would fight on regardless of Nazi gains, the civilian population of Paris would be drafted to build defenses for the fighting forces. Berlin, elated over reports of smashing successes on all far-flung fronts of war, tonight hailed announcement of the sinking of the British aircraft carrier Glorious as a stunning naval victory. An official communique, direct from the field headquarters of the Führer Hitler, reporting steady advances in the terrific battle on the Western Front, stated the 22,500-ton sister ship of the Courageous had been sunk in Norwegian waters off Narvik. Because the Anglo-French allies withdrew their forces to other fronts, King Haakon of Norway ordered his valiant little army to cease hostilities against the Germans and lay down their arms tonight. The Norwegian legation in Stockholm announced this. An official Norwegian spokesman stated, in a proclamation to his troops, King Haakon said the allies had withdrawn their forces to other fronts. Italy passed through what had been predicted as a crucial Sunday without actually coming any closer to entry into the conflict. But Giovanni Ansaldo, authoritative journalist, in a radio address, told Italian soldiers that the end of France was but a matter of a few days. And then, said Ansaldo, Italy and Germany will march together against England. Well, tense speculation about the news, but there is one subject on which we can all qualify as prophets, a subject in every life storehouse of human experience. We know a good number of us will suffer illness. We know a given number will suffer accidents. And while it is natural to hope that such lightning will always strike elsewhere, it is a good deal wiser to prepare for it. I was surprised to find how many families are prepared if sickness or accident should strike, how many face the future with real confidence and peace of mind. I came upon it in a booklet which describes a remarkable form of sickness and accident protection. It isn't old age insurance, and it isn't life insurance. Instead, it covers many common accidents and illnesses to which you and I and the man next door are subject every day. This booklet describes the North American Premier Limited Policy, which pays $25 a week in cash for stated sicknesses and accidents, up to $10,000 principal sum, and helps with doctor and hospital bills. And yet the total cost is only $10 a year, less than 3 cents a day. Men and women from 16 to 69 are eligible, and no medical examination is required. You and your family deserve and should enjoy the peace of mind such a policy provides. It seems to me such foresight should be as natural in any home as an umbrella in a rainstorm. But the booklet tells it far better than I can. So if you will reach for a postcard and write North American at Station WJR, Detroit, Michigan, simply giving your name and address, I'll send you the free booklet. And it is my guess you will make a discovery that will enable you to face an uncertain future with remarkable self-assurance. Well, at Washington, demands that the administration oust communist and Nazi sympathizers from government payrolls and sharp criticism of administration coddling of fifth column members were voiced tonight. by Representative Thomas, the Republican of New Jersey, and Representative Van Zandt, the Republican of Pennsylvania. Thomas, in speaking over Columbia Radio Network, declared both Hitler, the German Führer, and Stalin, Soviet Russia's leader, have long established fifth columns in the United States, but that the communistic order is the older, larger, and more experienced. Only with respect to their common treason to the government and the institutions of this country, Thomas said, are they on a par. Both operate with complete devotion to their foreign dictators and without the faintest trace of loyalty to the United States. In my opinion, he said, membership in both is enlistment for treason. Thomas, who is a member of the Dies Committee, named as chief Communist Party front organizations, which serve as units of Stalin's Fifth Column, the American Youth Congress, National Negro Congress, International Workers Order, International Labor Defense, American Student Union, Workers Alliance, and League of American Writers. He said high government officials, from the White House down, have lent the prestige of their names to subversive outfits. There's not a front organization among those which, he said, he named, which has not had the blessing of our federal administration. Tennessee had a brief fifth column scare today when radio station WSM suddenly went off the air in the midst of a speech by Dr. D.F. Fleming of Vanderbilt University advocating immediate and effective aid to the Allied. Many excited listeners phoned the station asking whether the transmitter had been bombed or dynamited. WSM, however, was forced to admit the trouble was nothing so serious or so spectacular. It actually was nothing more than what radio engineers called technical difficulties, and broadcasting was resumed in 3 minutes. Administration forces tonight launched an uphill battle to complete enactment of President Roosevelt's $5 billion preparedness program and meet his demand for adjournment by June 22nd. Confronted with Republican demands that Congress remain in session for the duration of the world emergency, Democratic strategists charted plans to send to the White House within 2 weeks the key props of the president's vast rearmament framework. Besides appropriation bills, these include a $1 billion defense tax bill, presidential authorization to mobilize the National Guard, and a resolution warning foreign powers that this nation will resist any land grabs in the Western Hemisphere. Congress will virtually complete the complex appropriation aspects of the chief executive's extraordinary defense demands during the week which lies immediately ahead. The National Grange today urged Congress to consider the plan of publisher Frank Gannett and candidate for the Republican presidential nomination to distribute American food surpluses among European war refugees. Gannett, according to the Grange announcement, suggested that Congress match dollar for dollar up to $500 million any amount spent for foodstuffs in the United States by the Allies. The supplies would be donated to the refugees. Congress should thoroughly explore the possibilities of this proposal, the Grange stated, and if found feasible, should act upon it before adjournment. Urgent requests for supplies to care for millions of war refugees pouring into central and southern France were received by the American Red Cross today from its representative in Paris, Richard Allen. Blankets, bed sacks, shoes, socks, underwear, dresses, towels, unbleached muslin, laundry soap, canned milk, chocolate, and coke are most urgently needed. Large stocks of these supplies will be sent on the Mercy ship McKeesport, which will begin loading Red Cross materials at New York tomorrow, according to Chairman Norman Davis. Reports of a critical food shortage situation in Nazi-occupied Belgium have been received by the State Department and indirectly by the American Red Cross. Red Cross sources said the civilian food supply would last only a month. Some reports have been received from United States Ambassador to Belgium, John Cudahy, now in Berlin, but a number of reports that Cudahy is known to have prepared have not been received due to delay in transmission. Until his full reports are received, the department was unwilling to make any of them public. Cudahy went to Berlin because communications from Brussels with the State Department were cut off, and from Berlin he could keep in closer touch with his home office. Well, Democratic Chairman James A. Foley today appointed the Committee on Arrangements for the National Convention and called the members to meet with him in Chicago on June 20th to prepare the program. Of the 21 named, 18 definitely are committed to a third term, and thus President Roosevelt's friends will dominate in the selection of the convention officials, including the keynoter and permanent chairman. Fowley, who has been against a third term, however, retained the chairmanship. W.W. Howes of South Dakota, former Assistant Postmaster General, and Oliver A. Quayle, Jr., Treasurer of the National Committee, are the others listed as opposed to a third term. Fowley will confer during the coming week with President Roosevelt for the purpose of learning whom he wants to be keynoter and permanent chairman. At a conference some time ago, Mr. Roosevelt indicated to Fowley that he wanted Senator Alvin W. Barkley, the Democrat of Kentucky, the keynoter, in 1932 and 36, to be the permanent chairman this time. Recently, however, reports have reached leading Democrats that Mr. Roosevelt, whose acceptance of a third-term nomination is taken as a foregone conclusion, wants a new slate of officials at the National Convention. At Kennebunk, Maine today, a mob of 500 townspeople burned the headquarters of a religious sect whose members earlier allegedly shot and critically wounded two Kennebunk men. Six members of the cult, alleged to be the Jehovah's Witnesses, were arrested by state police in connection with the shooting. Six shotguns and two rifles were confiscated by the police at the scene. The townspeople of Kennebunk attempted to storm the jail where members of the sect were taken following the shooting. And failing in this, they returned to the headquarters, sacked it, and set it on fire. The buildings were badly damaged by the flames. Well, over at Cleveland, Chunky Lawson Little, who has been in a kind of sports limbo since he turned pro 4 years ago, came out of it with a loud bang today when he whipped the veteran Gene Sarazen for the United States Open Championship. The former two-time winner of both the American and British amateur titles shot a 2-under par 70 on the long, soggy Canterbury course there. It was three knocks better than Sarazen's total, but the shoving crowd of 6,000 people rooted right down to the end for the little Italian in the forlorn hope that he would achieve the impossible, shoot a hole in nothing or something, and make the playoff go another 18 holes. But Little came through. It seems that Abe Pickus had his mind so much on the war and European affairs in general that he absentmindedly fell into the British habit of driving on the left side of the street in Cleveland. Pickus, the wealthy Cleveland oil man, noted for his transatlantic telephone calls offering war advice to the intelligent government, was quickly arrested and informed that driving on the left side of the street is a crime here in America. He was given a ticket and his case was set for June 17th. Here's the weather forecast for Detroit and vicinity. Local showers or thunderstorms Monday or Monday night. Considerable cloudiness and cooler Tuesday. Upper Michigan, showers Monday and Monday night followed by mostly cloudy weather. Tuesday, slightly warmer in the southwest portion. Cooler Monday night and in the east portion on Tuesday. Lower Michigan, local showers or thunderstorms Monday or Monday night. Warmer Monday in the northeast portion. Considerable cloudiness Tuesday in the east and south portions. The temperature here tonight is 69. The wind southeast, velocity 8 miles per hour. Humidity 80. Barometer reading 29.32. And that's king for a day.
The North American Premier Policy pays you $25 a week in cash for stated sicknesses and accidents, up to $10,000 principal sum, and helps with doctor and hospital bills. The complete cost is only $10 a year, and your protection is guaranteed by North American Accident Insurance Company. This company has been established over 50 years, has paid out more than $28 million to policyholders, and operates under the supervision of your own state insurance department. The complete story of this helpful protection is told in an interesting illustrated booklet called Cash or Sympathy. It is absolutely free and will be sent to you through the mail. Just send a letter or postcard to North American in care of station WJR Detroit, and the free booklet will be mailed to you postpaid. Remember, all you need do is send your name and address to North American, care of station WJR, Detroit. Jack King is heard each Sunday night at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time and is sponsored by North American Accident Insurance Company. Your announcer, Ted Grace. This is WJR, Detroit.